Welcome to Eva Olive, and welcome back for part two of the Shelley Notick case. This episode contains abuse and violence against children. Listener discretion is advised. When Dave entered the laundry room, he could not believe what he saw. Kathy lay there in the laundry room on a makeshift cot, dying before his eyes. One side of Kathy's face was drooping, and she was badly bruised. As Dave got closer to Kathy, he could see that she had vomited and was choking on it. He tried to clear the vomit from her mouth, but there was so much that he could not. He tried to see if Kathy could follow his finger with her eyes, but she couldn't track anything. She continued to gurgle, and suddenly her eyes rolled back into her head. Kathy was motionless. Shelley, unconcerned about Kathy's well-being, left with Sammy and Tori to pick up Nikki at her job, and left Dave to handle Kathy. Dave yelled for Shane to help him and asked what was wrong with her. Shane had no answer for what was happening to Kathy. Shane and Dave noticed that the vomit had started to come out of Kathy's nose, and suddenly she stopped breathing. They tried to do CPR to resuscitate Kathy and remove more vomit, but it was to no use. Kathy had died. Dave did not call 911. Instead, he called the restaurant that Nikki was working at and told Shelley what had happened. When Shelley arrived home, Dave told her that Kathy was gone. Shelley was confused about this statement. Dave reiterated to Shelley that Kathy was dead, and they began arguing and yelling at one another. All the kids were upstairs when Dave and Shelley were yelling. Nikki and Shane, however, went downstairs to see what was going on. They both walked into the laundry room and saw Kathy's lifeless body. Nikki was terrified as she saw Kathy's dead body laying there, battered and bruised. Her face was swollen and puffy, and she had no longer resembled the old Kathy at all. Shane tried to reason with his aunt and uncle to call for an ambulance, but it was to no avail. Shelley packed up the girls and took them to a motel. When they checked in, she gave the kids money and left them there alone and returned to the house. Dave was confused and did not want his family to get in trouble for the death of Kathy. He decided the best way to dispose of her body was to burn her. He turned their outdoor burn pit into a makeshift crematorium by reinforcing it with tin and steel so the fire would burn hot. He took wood from around the property and from the dilapidated barn and put the pieces into the fire pit. Dave and Shane carried Kathy's body to the fire pit and placed her on top of it and placed more wood on top of her, as well as old tires. Shelley grabbed all of Kathy's clothing and belongings and placed them in the fire as well. Dave then poured gasoline and diesel over the entire pyre and lit it on fire. Shane and Shelley left and went back to the motel that Sammy, Tori, and Nikki were staying at. Dave stayed back at the house. It took him all night to burn the body. By the morning, when the fire had subsided, he could see pieces of bone in the ash. Knowing that he could not start another fire due to the daylight, he shoveled the bones and the ashes and placed them into a bucket. He then drove to Long Beach and scattered everything into the ocean. When Shelley returned the next day with the kids, Nikki could remember the unmistakable smell that was in the air. She could smell the diesel, the tires burning, and another scent that she had never smelled before. It was the smell of human burning flesh. Nikki and Shane were upset about Kathy's death, but it had hit Sammy the hardest. Sammy loved Kathy and was always trying to help her and give her food when her mother wasn't looking. Shelley had no sympathy and did not care. She told the kids that if they told anyone about Kathy, they would all go to jail. She tried to tell the kids that Kathy had committed suicide, and that is what they were going to tell everyone. Shane and Nikki knew better. They knew better than to believe Shelley's story. They knew the truth about Kathy and what really happened. Shelley became so paranoid about Kathy's death that she instructed the kids to go back to the fire pit and pull stuff out. She told Shane and Nikki that Dave had burned some items that he shouldn't have, and they needed to pull everything out and place it into a bucket. Shane and Nikki did as they were instructed, and when they rifled through the ashes, they realized that they were picking out pieces of Kathy. When they were finished digging out all the pieces of bone, jewelry, and other items belonging to Kathy, they gave the bucket to Shelley, and she disposed of it. Dave also dug up the burn pile with a backhoe and disposed of the dirt on an old logging road. Once the earth had been removed, Shelley used the area for a garden. It had been some time since Kathy's death, and Shelley still needed a story. She knew that suicide would not work, so she told everyone that Kathy ran off with Rocky, the make-believe boyfriend that Shelley told Kathy's family about. Shelley even went as far as to have her eldest daughter, Nikki, write letters to Kathy's family about Rocky and how they ran away together. But her paranoia would get the best of her. Shelley feared that the neighbors might have seen or heard something. She made Nikki and Shane spy on the neighbors for hours and for days to see if they knew anything. Each time Nikki and Shane would return, they would tell Shelley that the neighbors didn't know anything. But this still did not satisfy Shelley. She continued to force the kids to spy on the neighbors by hiding in their garbage or spending all day in their crawl space beneath the house. A year had passed since Kathy's death, and Shelley's paranoia had not gone away. Not only was Shelley still paranoid about the neighbors, but she had also started to become paranoid about Shane. Shelley knew she could manipulate her own children, but not Shane. Shane was the only kid who would stand up to Shelley. Although she would beat him for it, he continued to tell Shelley that she was wrong and disagreed with her at every chance he had. Shane was now Shelley's number one target. But she knew that she had to fabricate a story to blackmail Shane into keeping quiet. And that is exactly what she did. One day, when Dave came home after being gone all week working, Shelley was holding a pair of little Tori's underwear. When Shelley held them closer, Dave could see that the underwear was bloody. Shelley stated that she found them in the shed and that Shane must have hid them there. Dave could not believe what Shelley was saying. Shane was a good kid and would never hurt Tori. But Shelley was so convincing that Dave beat Shane that night. Shane's face was bruised, battered, and swollen from the beating. It was one of the worst beatings he had ever received while living in the Nodick house. In February of 1995, Dave and Shelley told Nikki, Sammy, and Tori that their cousin Shane had run away and was gone for good. Nikki was now 19, Sammy was 16, and Tori was just 6 years old. Nikki knew, though, that her mother's behavior was strange. Each time anyone ran away from her mother would search for them until they were found and bring them back to the house. Each time when Shane did run away, she would pack up all the kids and search all night for him until he was found and bring him back home, just as she did with Kathy. But this time it was different. Her mother wasn't in a panic to search for Shane. She didn't search at all. Shelley told the kids that Shane left a note saying that he ran away, and the note stated, quote, "I love you, Mom." Nikki knew Shane would never write that. He hated Shelley and Dave, and if he did run away, he would have never left a note telling them that he had ran away. Time went by, and there was still no sign of Shane. Shelley told the kids that Shane had called and talked to her while they were at school, and he stated that he was on a fishing boat in Alaska. Shelley continued this lie for weeks, stating that she continued to receive calls from Shane when either the girls were not there or when they were at school. But Nikki knew it wasn't true. She could never believe her mother. Now that Shane and Kathy were both gone, Nikki became her mother's favorite target of abuse. Shelley would lock Nikki out of the front porch in the freezing cold all night long. She would take her clothes away and put them in the trash. And the violence was just as bad as ever. One time, Shelley forced Nikki to work in the yard in her underwear. Shelley came running outside with a knife and straight towards Nikki. Nikki ran as fast as she could, but this only enraged Shelley more. Once Shelley reached Nikki, it was too late. The knife had went straight into Nikki's leg, and she started to bleed. Nikki managed to get up and run away and ended up sleeping in the woods that night. She saw the knife wound. It was a 2-inch gash that needed to be stitched up, but she knew that she would not be allowed to seek medical attention. The next morning, when Nikki returned, Shelley did not speak a word to her. It was as if nothing had ever happened. Although Shelley abused all of her children, Tori and Sammy did not get as much abuse as Nikki. Rather, Sammy was more or less her favorite child, and Tori was too little to be abused. Therefore, Nikki received most of the abuse. Shelley would tell her children that Nikki was a bad kid and a bad influence. Shelley also did not let Nikki and Sammy be alone together unless it was to do chores. She did not want Nikki to talk to Sammy or to Tori for fear of Nikki turning them against her. Laura, Shelley's stepmother, continued to reach out and see how the kids were doing. She also inquired about Shane. But each time, she was given another excuse by Shelley. Either Shane was out with friends, on a trip, or not available. Finally, Shelley told Laura that Shane was in Alaska working on a fishing boat. Shelley told Laura that she would have Shane call him and check in. But Laura never received the call. By 1993, Nikki graduated from high school and started going to community college. She was excited and ready to better her life, but it was short-lived. Shortly after she started college, she found her clothes were going missing, and she was forced to go to the campus in old, dirty sweats. Then, Shelley took away her bedroom and made her sleep in the living room where Kathy once was forced to sleep. As if this was not hard enough, Shelley took away her money and means of transportation to and from school. Nikki now had no clothes, no bedroom, no money, and now no way to get to and from her college. Even at Nikki's lowest, Shelley still found ways to abuse her daughter. She called her a lazy bitch, worthless, and that she needed to get a job and support herself. However, Nikki was no longer the scared, sad little girl that she once was. She started to fight back. One day, when Shelley started to chase Nikki, and Nikki knew this scene all too well, as she had been chased before. Shelley caught up to Nikki, but Nikki didn't lay down and take a beating. Nikki fought back. She hit her mother, Shelley, and Shelley fell to the ground. This was the first time that anyone dared to strike or disobey Shelley. Nikki looked her straight in the eyes and said, quote, "Fuck off, Mom. Don't you ever touch me." After this, Shelley told Nikki that her sister Sammy did not want her around anymore, which this was a lie. Shelley gave Nikki some cash and sent her to live with her Aunt Trish in Canada from her father's side. She was supposed to return home just after 10 days, but Nikki was happier than ever being with her Aunt Trish. She did not tell her aunt about the abuse. She just stated that she didn't want to go back, and her aunt agreed and let her stay. Now with Nikki gone, Sammy started to receive the abuse. She was pretty and popular at school, but her mother made sure to make her life a living hell as well. Sammy's school books would be burned by Shelley. Sammy would be locked out of the house and was subjected to verbal and emotional abuse by her mother. Sammy at one point told a counselor at school about her mom, but then she said it was a lie for fear of getting in trouble. Sammy was almost done with school, had a boyfriend, and was looking forward to life without her mother. Like Nikki, she could not stand the abuse any longer. She reached out to Nikki for advice, and Nikki told her to call Grandma Lara. Sammy did, and Lara was happy to have Sammy come and live with her. The summer of 97, Sammy lived with Lara, and it was one of the happiest times of her life. Nikki had moved away from her Aunt Trish and called her grandmother Lara to possibly help her with getting a job at a nursing home that she ran in Bellingham, Washington. Lara loved the idea and told her that Sammy was living with her too, and it would be great to have them both there. Nikki had not seen or talked to her sister in a long time and was excited to finally do so. She hopped on a bus and went to her grandma Lara's house. When Sammy first saw Nikki, she looked better than she had ever seen her. When they lived with their mother, Nikki was never allowed to wear makeup, have nice clothes, or even do her hair. But Nikki looked beautiful. She looked happy and was more beautiful than she had ever been. Nikki felt the same way about Sammy. Both Nikki and Sammy worried about Tori. However, Sammy said that she was able to speak with Tori, and Tori assured Sammy that everything was fine and Mom was not being mean to her. By this time, Dave and Shelley's finances were at its worst. They owed thousands of dollars to multiple creditors. They had past due bills and virtually no money to their name. She called the creditors with lie after lie. Shelley would tell them that one of her daughters was dying, or that she was dying, or someone else in the family was dying. The financial problems further spurred Shelley's abuse, and now the only target she had was her youngest daughter, Tori, who was just 8 years old. Tori was abused just like her sisters were. She was yelled at, beaten, and attacked at any chance. But this was different. Tori did not have anyone. At least Sammy and Nikki had each other, or Nikki at least had Shane. Tori was all alone in her suffering. Due to the financial difficulty that the Nodics were in, Shelley had to get a job, and she managed to get one being a caseworker for the Olympic Area Agency on the Aging in Raymond, Washington. It was at this time she met Ron Woodworth. Ron helped with Habitat for Humanity and met Shelley through the organization. They both helped an elderly woman rehome cats. Ron was a nice guy who was sarcastic and funny. He was aged in his early 50s and was in a relationship with his partner Gary, but they broke up in 1997. Tori liked Ron, as he was nice and really kind to her. Ron and Shelley visited often and became fast friends. Shelley and Ron were so close that Ron gave her money on multiple occasions. Even if he couldn't afford to do it, he would help Shelley at any chance he could. By 1999, Ron was estranged from his family. He lost his father, and he was now broken up with his partner Gary. Shelley saw that he needed a place to stay, so she told Tori and Dave that Ron was going to move in with them until he could get back on his feet. When Ron came, Shelley gave him Sammy's old bedroom, and he unpacked all of his books, personal items, and his belongings. Little did he know that this move would prove to be a fateful one. It wasn't long before Shelley started to treat Ron as she did Kathy. Ron, when answering Shelley, would have to reply with, "Yes, dear Shelley," or "Okay, Shelley, dear." Anything else would send her into a rage. Shelley also started to hurl homophobic insults at Ron on a daily basis. Soon, Ron was not allowed to eat or shower. Just like Kathy, Shelley started to feed Ron pills daily, telling him that it would make him better and that he needed to trust her. Watching Ron turn into someone that he wasn't broke Tori's heart. She loved Ron, and Ron adored Tori. She could not understand why her mother would treat Ron this way, but Tori was too young to remember Kathy and what her mother did to her. Eventually, like Kathy, Ron was forced out of his bedroom, his personal items were taken away, and he was forced to sleep on the floor in their computer room. He could not use the bathroom inside the house and was forced to defecate outside. Shelley was still working as a caseworker for the Olympic Agency, but it was not long until her manager started to notice her unpredictable behavior and started to receive complaints from the patients. Shelley was accused of stealing and taking things from the patients. She, of course, denied this, but was eventually fired from her job in 2001. Ron continued to live with Shelley, despite the abuse that she put him through. Although he had not spoke to his family or friends after moving in with Shelley, Ron's friend Sandra tried to contact him. Sandra knew that Ron was living with Shelley, and she would call to try and speak with him. But each time, Shelley would tell Sandra that Ron was either busy or not at the house. Even Ron's family, who was estranged from him, tried to contact him. But Shelley made Ron write a scathing letter to his mother, telling her that he did not care for her anymore and wanted to be left alone. He also wrote in his letters that Shelley was the best person he had ever met and that she was helping him. Sandra and Ron's mother knew something was not right. This was not like Ron to send mean letters to his mother and not communicate with his friends. Little did they know, it was Shelley who was manipulating Ron in order to drive him further and further away from the ones that he once loved and cared about. By 2001, Nikki was 26 years old and doing well for herself. She was no longer being abused by her mother. She was independent and had a life of her own that made her happy. She wanted to go to Oregon for a job interview and called her grandma Laura. Laura again was excited to have Nikki stay with her, and so Nikki did. When Nikki arrived, Laura was happy to see her, but Nikki had something she needed and wanted to tell her grandmother. Nikki told Laura about Kathy Loreno and that her mother had killed her. Laura was shocked and could not believe what she was hearing. Laura told Nikki that they needed to contact the police, and Nikki agreed. Laura phoned the police, and the sheriff came to the house and took Nikki's statement. Nikki was instructed to write everything down and fax it over to the Pacific County Police in Raymond, Washington. Nikki was so frightened about what she had just done that she returned home to Bellingham, Washington, to her home that she shared with her boyfriend, Chad. When she arrived home, Nikki decided to tell Chad the story as well. They both decided that she needed to go to the police and tell them in person. While driving to the police station, Nikki called her sister Sammy to tell her what she was about to do. It was during this phone call that Nikki told her sister Sammy something that she had suspected for a long time. She told Sammy that she thought their mother had killed Shane. Nikki got off the phone with Sammy, went into the police station, and told them everything that she knew. Sadly, nothing would come of it. The police never went to the Nodick residence and questioned Shelley about Kathy Loreno or Shane. Nikki and Sammy still contacted their mother, Shelley, but it was not often. They both found out that a man named Ron was staying with her, and they both got a sick feeling in their stomachs. It was Kathy all over again. When they called and they were able to speak with Tori, their little sister never let them know that her or Rob were being abused and tortured. However, Tori still loved Ron. Ron was trying to be nice to her, and Tori would sneak him food when her mother wasn't looking. Her mother knew that Tori loved Ron and wanted to hurt her for it. One day, Shelley instructed Ron to tell Tori that he did not love her anymore. Tori stood there crying and could not believe that the old man in front of her could say such a hurtful thing. But little did Tori know, it was her mother forcing him to say it. Sammy decided to visit Tori at her mother's house with her boyfriend Kaylee. When they arrived, they saw a frail man in a woman's t-shirt working in the yard. Both stated that he looked horrible, and Sammy knew at that moment that her mother was doing the same thing she had done to Kathy, but to Ron. Nikki found out about this and confronted her mother. She left a voicemail on her mother's machine stating, quote, "I know there's a man living there, and you need to get him out of the house before history repeats itself." Shelley lied and said everything was fine, but Nikki knew better. Ron ran away just like Kathy and Shane had, but Shelley always found him and brought him back. Tori was confused. If her mother hated Ron so much, why did she want him back at the house? Why wouldn't she just let him go? Tori did not dare question her mother. She knew that if she questioned Shelley, she was in for a world of abuse and torture. Tori was already being abused and didn't want any more. One time, Shelley went as far as to use a pressure washer on Tori. For what reason? No one can remember. Little did anyone know, Shelley did have a use for Ron. She used Ron as a way to help care for another elderly man. A man who was a Pearl Harbor survivor named James McClintock, but was known to everyone as Mac. It just so happened that Mac was friends with Kathy Loreno's mother, and that's how Shelley knew him. She needed Ron to help care for Mac because she was unable to live at the house full time. So she moved Ron into Mac's house to take care of him. At this time, the police still had not really looked into Kathy Loreno or Shane's disappearance. Laura found out from Sammy that Shelley was again taking care of another elderly man and immediately called the Pacific County Police Station and spoke to Deputy Bergstrom. Deputy Bergstrom stated that he was busy with the trial and had not had time to investigate the matter further. Laura was told that the deputies were possibly building a case against Shelley and that they needed time to do that. After this conversation, Laura was upset and phoned Shane's other grandparents to see if they had heard anything from him, but they had not. Shelley was still caring for Mac and manipulated him into giving her power of attorney over his entire estate. However, Mac had it set up that everything went to his black lab named Sissy in the wake of his death, but once Sissy passed, Shelley would get everything. His house, his money, bank accounts, all of it. Shelley was pleased and excited. Tori found out about this from her mother and did not know what to make of it. She knew Mac and liked him like a grandfather figure, and she was hoping that he was okay and that her mother wouldn't make him suffer like Ron. In February of 2002, Tori was about to leave to a football game when she received a phone call from her mother. Shelley told Tori that Mac was hurt and she was coming to pick her up. When they arrived at the hospital, Tori found out that Ron was with Mac and he had fallen and hit his head and that he had died. Tori was distraught with sadness. After Mac's death, Shelley did receive $5,000 and Mac's dog, Sissy. The dog was chained up outside of the house waiting to die so Shelley could inherit Mac's house that was worth roughly $140,000. After the death of Mac, Tori was upstairs and could hear yelling coming from the downstairs. As she got closer, she heard her mother say that Ron killed Mac and that he was a murderer. By March 19, 2002, Deputy Bergstrom heard that a man that Shelley was caring for had died. The deputy called Laura and told her about it, and at that moment, Laura knew that Shelley had something to do with it. But Deputy Bergstrom stated that the man was old and already dying. Laura asked if the deputy had talked to Sammy to corroborate Nikki's story, but he had not. When Nikki informed the police about Kathy, she told them to contact her sister Sammy to verify her story, but little did she know. Sammy never answered the deputy's calls. She was too afraid. By the spring of 2003, Ron had lost his teeth and his hair just like Kathy did. He also lost so much weight that he no longer even resembled his old self. It was at this time that Deputy Bergstrom was at the house to serve papers to Ron. No one answered the door, but the deputy did see Ron. But when he tried to approach him, Ron ran off. After the deputy left, he received a phone call from Shelley. Shelley was upset that the deputy even came by her house to serve paperwork to Ron, but the paperwork still needed to be served, so Shelley agreed to meet the deputy at the post office. When Shelley arrived at the post office, she had told the deputy that Ron had moved to Tacoma. But Deputy Bergstrom stated that that was a lie because he had just seen Ron at her house. Shelley turned and walked away, but before she could leave, the deputy asked her about Kathy Loreno. Shelley simply stated that she had not seen or heard from Kathy in a very long time. When Shelley returned home, she called Sammy to give her a pop quiz about Kathy to ensure that the lie that she had said years ago was still in place. She asked Sammy, quote, "Do you remember the name of her boyfriend?" Sammy answered all her mother's questions, and Shelley told her that she needed to say these answers or Tori would suffer. She said that Tori would be put into foster care and suffer if the lie was not told. Sammy simply agreed and got off the phone. The deputy asking Shelley questions about Ron and Kathy did not deter her from the abuse. She continued to abuse Ron with bleach baths, beatings, and other forms of torture. One time, she ran a bath so hot for Ron that when his feet entered the water, the flesh peeled from his feet. Tori stated she remembered the house smelling like decay and bleach. However, the smell was Ron. He was dying, and her mother kept torturing him. By the summer of 2003, Shelley knew that Ron was dying, and she tried to come up with a plan to get rid of him by dropping him off at a homeless shelter. But Ron refused to go. She called Dave while he was away at work and told him that Ron tried to kill himself. Shelley ended up taking Ron to Mac's house so he could rest and be alone. Tori never saw him again. She begged her mother to let her go and see Ron, but she always said that he was resting or too busy to visit with her. Shortly after, Ron went to go live at Mac's. Shelley allowed Tori to go up to Seattle to visit her sister, Sammy. This was surprising, as Tori was never able to visit her sisters. When Tori arrived in Seattle, Sammy surprised her with Nikki as well. She had not seen her eldest sister in so long that she could barely recognize her. She was beautiful and happy. However, back at the Nodick house, something more evil was taking place. Shelley had phoned Dave at work and told him that something was wrong with Ron. Dave knew instantly that something wasn't right in the sound of Shelley's voice. Dave returned home, and it was a horror that he had seen once before. Shelley said that she had found Ron dead on the back porch, and that the burns on his body and his feet were caused from a brush fire chore that he was doing. She told Dave she was afraid someone would blame her for his death. She also told him that she had put Ron's body in the freezer outside. She tried to save him and resuscitate him, but it was too late. Dave, like with Kathy, told Shelley he would take care of it. But there was a burn ban in place. Dave was not able to burn Ron's body like he did Kathy's. Therefore, he decided to bury Ron on their property. He dug a hole deep enough for his body, took the ashes and the burnt branches from an old burn pile that was nearby, and placed it on top of Ron's grave. He wanted to make it look like the burn pile had been there forever. While in Seattle, Tori was loving every minute of being with her sisters. However, Nikki did have to leave. Tori stayed with Sammy for the night, and when they were at Sammy's house, Tori felt so comfortable that she opened up to Sammy about the abuse that Shelley was inflicting onto her, as well as Ron. Sammy was completely devastated as she listened to the stories of abuse and torture that Tori had been enduring all these years. It was as if someone was replaying a rerun of a bad movie of her own life. Tori always told Sammy that their mother wasn't abusing her and that she was different, but it was all a lie to cover up what her mother had been doing. Sammy knew that she needed to tell her sister about Kathy, and so she did. Sammy asked how Ron was doing, and Tori stated that she thought he was dead and that their mother had killed him. They both decided at that moment that they needed to tell Nikki everything. It was shortly past 2 a.m. in the morning when Nikki received a phone call from Sammy. She explained everything to Nikki about the abuse of Tori and now the abuse of Ron. It was Kathy all over again. Their visit was coming to an end, and unfortunately, Sammy had to take Tori back to her mother's house. She asked if Tori could hang on while she found out a plan in order to get Tori out safely. On the drive back home, Sammy told her that if her mother says Ron left, she probably killed him. Needless to say, when Tori got into the car with her mother, she told Tori that Ron had left and got a job. Tori knew in that moment that Ron was gone. When she returned home, Tori looked for items of Ron's to see where he could have gone or maybe where he was at. When she went to the outdoor freezer, she found his belongings on and around it and the bloody bandages that were used to wrap his foot. She could not understand why they were here. If he had left, they would have been with him. Tori remembered how Sammy explained to her how her mother killed Kathy and burnt her in a burn pile in their backyard. Therefore, Tori went to the fire pit outside to see if she could find anything. She found the burn pile, but something was different about it. It had been moved, and the earth underneath was smooth. However, she did see ashes. It was at that moment she picked up a handful and realized this could be Ron. Nikki and Sammy knew that they had to get their sister out of there as fast as possible. On August 6th, 2003, they both went to the Pacific County Sheriff's Office and told them everything they knew. Nikki and Sammy ended up calling Tori that evening and told her that the police would be there soon and to hang on. The next morning, Tori answered the door. It was the sheriff. The sheriff stated that they were there with CPS to remove Tori and taking her away because of suspected child abuse. The sheriff then took Tori upstairs for her to collect anything that she needed. And a brave Tori turned around and told the sheriff they needed to come back with a search warrant. She said that she had found Ron's belongings in and around the freezer out back by the shed, and that there was a bloody bandage of his. The police did just that. When they returned the next morning, they found Ron Woodward's body buried on the property. And on August 8, 2003, Michelle Notick and David Notick were arrested, and Tori was placed in the care of her sister, Sammy. In 2004, Shelley was convicted of second-degree murder and manslaughter for the torture and deaths of Kathy Loreno and Ron Woodworth. She was sentenced to 22 years in prison and was sent to the Washington Correction Center for Women in Gig Harbor. Dave Notick was convicted for the murder of their 17-year-old nephew, Shane Watson, and was sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was sent to the Monroe Correctional Complex, but was released in 2016 after serving 13 years of his 15-year sentence. According to the book, If You Tell, by Greg Olson, Dave explains what happened to Shane Watson, his 17-year-old nephew who had disappeared. It was in February of 1995. Dave came home, grabbed his gun, went to the shed where his nephew was, and shot Shane in the back of the head. He went back into the house, told Shelley, and then disposed of Shane's body the next day. The very next day, the girls went to a friend's house. This allowed Dave to put Shane's lifeless body onto a pile of wood and burn him. He shoveled the ashes into a bag and took them to another beach and disposed of everything there, just as he did with Kathy. He stated that Shelley had manipulated him into believing that Shane was going to ruin their entire lives with the death of Kathy if he told anyone. So he killed him for her. Shelley Notick is still in prison, but is scheduled for early release next year in June of 2022. In an article by Marco Magaritoff, the family stated they were concerned about Shelley's impending release. Sammy said, quote, "If she ever turns up on my doorstep, I can just see myself locking all my doors and barricading myself in the bathroom to call the police." Sammy took care of Tori. Shortly after Shelley's arrest, Shelley wrote Tori a letter, quote, "I've chose so badly in my life. I've made so many mistakes and wrong choices, ones I regret so much. But you are not like me. Please never believe what you've heard. There is more to it all." Since Tori was living with Sammy, Sammy never gave Tori the letter. All three sisters stay in constant contact and visit each other throughout the year. They are doing well despite their monstrous mother and the abuse and torture they endured by her. Nikki lives in the suburbs of Seattle in a beautiful home with beautiful children. Sammy moved back to her hometown and is a school teacher and also has children of her own. Tori, the youngest of the Notick sisters, lived in Oregon for a while before she moved to Colorado for a change in scenery. Although their life in the beginning was horrible, they've moved on, and they made sure to never make the mistakes with their own children that their mother did with them. All the sisters have a bond that is unbreakable and is a true testament to the love between sisters and how strong it really is.